stay tuned for Mic Check coming up in just a moment. Welcome to WPKN's Mic Check Show, which comes to you every Sunday at 5:30 p.m., just before the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. Mic Check is a show which deals with global, national, and regional issues and their effect on our local communities. Each week we have a different host with a different issue. So this is my shot, Richard Hill, on the second Sunday of the month, and I'm here to have a very interesting conversation with our special guest, Henry Lowendorf, who is joining us from New Haven. Henry, are you with us?
I am.
Thank
Hello.
You. Thanks so much for being with us. I just want to say
thank you.
Henry is the chair of the Greater New Haven Peace Council, and he's here today to talk about an important referendum, which is going to be on the New Haven ballot on November 3rd. He is one of the inventors and originators of this initiative. And so, but Henry, before we get into the meat of the matter, why don't you just say a word about the history and role of the Greater New Haven Peace Council?
Well, the Greater New Haven Peace Council evolved from a number of peace groups and coalitions out of the 1970s and became part of the U.S. Peace Council at the end of the 70s. The U.S. Peace Council is a member of the World Peace Council, which has over 100 peace councils in 100 countries around the world. And the Greater New Haven Peace Council is of course very active on peace and justice issues and developing coalitions and working on local issues that have to do with peace and justice and state and national issues. That's the short. Hello.
Hello.
Richard, did I lose you?
I think I lost myself there for a second. I think inadvertently put my elbow on a button that I shouldn't have. So we got all that, and thank you for that, little thumbnail sketch of the important work of the New Haven Peace Council, Greater New Haven Peace Council. Well, Henry Lowendorf, why don't we begin by just having you tell us what this referendum is and how it sort of took shape, a little bit about the history of, you know, the iterations of it that have passed through New Haven and perhaps other cities in Connecticut and around the country.
Right. Well, the this referendum was actually created mainly by the City of New Haven Peace Commission, which is a commission of the city. It's part of the city charter and has membership of basically adult residents in the City of New Haven. The Peace Commission came up with the idea that the Peace Council, which is a non-governmental organization, fully supported and has acted on and in coalition with the Peace Commission, came up with the idea of putting a referendum on the ballot that would deal with this enormous military budget that Congress passes every year and the president signs, and is rarely mentioned by the media or by candidates for office at any level. And the language of the referendum is the following: shall Congress prepare for health and climate crises by transferring funds from military budgets to cities for human needs, jobs, and an environmentally sustainable economy? And that will be in Spanish as well. It is in Spanish. It is on the ballot. People are already voting on it because many people are casting absentee ballots in Connecticut and, in this case, in New Haven. It's a referendum that's only on the New Haven ballot, and it came about after the Peace Commission proposed it. It was sent to the Board of Alders, and a hearing was held, and a coalition of over 20 groups, social justice groups, peace groups, trade unions, spoke in favor of this referendum at the public hearing at the Board of Alders. And the committee that heard it, the Health and Human Services Committee of the Board, voted unanimously to support it and pass it on to the full Board of Alders, which then also passed it unanimously in August. So the hearing, the public hearing, was held in June, and the board finally passed it in August as soon as it came up. So now it's on the ballot, and people are voting. They can vote yes or no on this referendum. The Peace Council and the Peace Commission and the social justice organizations that are part of the coalition are, you know, advertising and broadcasting the fact that it's on the ballot and urging voters to vote yes. So that's the background of this particular referendum.
Thanks, Henry. Tell us a little bit about the history of this referendum, because I think it has appeared and been voted on and actually passed by the New Haven Board of Alders in past years and decades, in fact. And if that's the case, why do you bring it up now again for approval?
So this is a good question. This is the third time that a peace referendum has been on New Haven ballot. The first one was in 1989, and it was actually an anti-nuclear weapons referendum, and that passed with a huge majority in New Haven, calling for getting rid of nuclear weapons, treaties to end, for all countries to get rid of their nuclear weapons. There are now 9 nuclear states, nuclear weapons states, and so in 1989, the people, the voters of New Haven, said, "Get rid of these. They're civilization killers. They kill the planet." In 2012, another referendum was placed on the ballot. Also, in each case, the Board of Alders voted to put the referendum on the ballot. And that was a referendum to cut the military budget. The wording was different. The wording in 2012 was based on the situation, the economic political situation in 2012. And that also passed overwhelmingly in New Haven. And in that case, there were over 40,000 people who voted for president in 2012, and 27,000 people voted on the referendum. So, and then of those, over 80% voted for it. So it had an overwhelming majority. But the reason we're doing it again is that what has become quite apparent over the last few years, and this year especially, is that cities like New Haven are running out of money. There are 20 to 30 cities that across the country that are on the edge of bankruptcy. Hartford had to be bailed out by the state of Connecticut recently. Bridgeport and Waterbury are also on the edge. And New Haven is cutting services. It's cutting back on staff, laying people off, or not hiring people to fill empty positions. And it's raising taxes. And what people are aware of is that our city is unable to maintain itself. It's unable to maintain its schools. It's unable to maintain the physical structure of the city. People can't afford housing and so forth. And it has become a dire situation in most cities across the country. And the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic that hit us this year has made things even worse. So this is a referendum that's aimed at the specific elements of the crises, the numerous crises that we are facing right now in New Haven and of course across the country. So the referendum talks about providing money for human needs, jobs, an environmentally sustainable economy, and it talks about the crises of health and climate, and those have become just so obvious in this country and around the world. So this referendum is focusing on the crises of today. There's another point, and that is, and this was true in 2012, and it was true in 1989. That is that our congressional representatives in Connecticut, and specifically the 3rd District congressional representative, and our two senators every year vote for the military budget. They vote for an amount of money that is beyond understanding. It is close to $1 trillion every year. And it just totally obscures the money that goes to everything else in the federal budget. So, for example, Veterans Affairs and Health and Human Services, education, Homeland Security, housing, international and state things like the State Department, energy, justice, transportation, agriculture, all of these things and more take up 45% of the budget. They all have to split 45%. And the military gets 55%, and that's a very conservative figure. There are calculations that say it's closer to 70% goes to war and weapons every year. So it's not just the current crises, but the fact that our representatives don't respond. Our representatives are saying, yes, let's spend all this money on the military. Let's spend all the money on the wars, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Yemen. It goes on and on. We spend all this money on wars and building weapons, and the cities are starving. The people are starving. Over 20% of the people in New Haven are food insecure in a country that makes more than enough food for everybody. But over 20, and in some neighborhoods, 70%. People don't have food at the end of the month. They can't afford it. People can't afford housing. So all of these crises taking place, and our representatives in Congress keep voting this huge treasure. Huge treasure. It's our tax money. It's our children's tax, our grandchildren's. They're going to have to pay the debt for this. And they keep on doing it. They keep on ignoring the needs of the cities, really. That's the reason we're doing it again.
Thanks again, Henry. We're speaking with Henry Lowendorf. He's the chair of the Greater New Haven Peace Council, and he has crafted, along with his colleagues, a referendum which reads, "Shall Congress prepare for health and climate crises by transferring funds from the military budget to cities for human needs, jobs, and an environmentally sustainable economy?" Henry, tell us how much Connecticut actually sends to the federal government, which you point out, 55% of which goes to the military each year, and how much do we get back from the federal government? Connecticut.
Well, Connecticut typically sends more to the federal government than it gets back in all different forms. And that's because Connecticut is a rich state. A state like Mississippi sends less because it's a poor state. But Connecticut sends to the federal government $15 or so billion in taxes. And it receives $10, $12, $14 billion in revenue from the federal government. And the amount that comes in terms of military goes up and down. But it's not a small, it's not a not an insignificant amount of money. And that money, actually, a very small amount of it goes to jobs. Much of it goes into capital equipment. Much of it goes into the executive salaries and the profits of the military-industrial complex. But one of the excuses that our members of Congress give in funding the military every year is it's a jobs program. They're funding jobs. They're keeping these jobs in Connecticut. Well, the fact is that as manufacturing becomes more robotized and as these military contractors move to cheaper states and abroad, the number of jobs in Connecticut has gone down. During the Trump administration and the Obama administration, the military budget started going up again. And so they're planning to build more nuclear submarines, and they're planning to build more bomber engines for new bombers and new military helicopters. So more money is coming into the state for these jobs. But there could be, for the same amount of money, far more jobs manufacturing civilian goods. For example, manufacturing the turbines for windmills, or manufacturing high-speed trains, manufacturing what we need for a green economy, solar, rehabbing old buildings that are energy inefficient. The far more jobs would be created. Or if we spent the money on health care and education, we would get far more jobs. All of the jobs that we're talking about are decent-paying jobs with good benefits, whether they're in the military sector, whether they're building weaponry, or whether they're building things that people need. What we have is an industrial policy in this country, in a nation that ideologically denies that it has industrial policy. It denies that it has central planning. It denies that the government is controlling the economy by choosing winners and losers. We have an economy that chooses winners, and that's the military-industrial complex. And it chooses losers. That's our cities. Our cities are losing while the military-industrial complex is getting super rich. So that's the background of the need for the referendum and the need for us to get the conversation started with our members of Congress and force them. When they're out campaigning, they don't talk about this $1 trillion military budget. They never talk about it. It's not in the newspapers. It's not on television. It's rarely mentioned.
And yet,
so
Henry,
we need to get it mentioned.
There was a move in Congress, I believe in both houses, to reduce the military budget by 10%, and that came up, in the past 6 months. Can you mention just the nuts and bolts of that and how our Connecticut delegation presented themselves to in the face of that proposal?
This is the first time in my memory, that Congress has actually had put in front of it a bill, and they voted on it, that called for specifically cutting the Pentagon budget. And it was put forward by a representative from California, Barbara Lee, and Mark Pocan, a representative from Wisconsin, a number of other representatives in the House, and by Bernie Sanders in the Senate. 10% cut. And nominally, the budget that the Trump sent to Congress for the Pentagon was $740 billion. So this 10% would have been $74 billion. A very significant amount of money, even though it's just a small piece, a very small piece of the Pentagon budget. It's $74 billion would go a long way toward providing education for college or health care or veterans benefits and so forth, all the things that we need, transportation. And 93 Democrats, let me be more clear about it. 93 Democrats voted in favor of that 10%. And there were another 35 Republicans and one Libertarian who voted yes, cut to 10%. So 125 representatives out of the 435. That's not a small number, voted cut the military budget by 10%. That was a need, even though it lost, okay, it lost. It was a huge success in terms of it was a first. It brought up the subject. And in the Senate, I think there were over 20, and I think they were all Democrats, who voted to cut the military budget by 10%. In the House, the only representative from Connecticut who voted yes to cut that 10% was Representative Johanna Hayes from the 5th Congressional District. That's Waterbury and much of Waterbury and the northwest part of Connecticut. She was the only one. She had the courage to say, cut the military budget by 10%. The other four representatives, including ours, Rosa DeLauro, voted, no, 10% is too much to cut out of the military. 10% is too much. Yeah. The other victory, which I think is also significant in terms of voting, is that both senators from Connecticut, Chris Murphy and Richard Blumenthal, voted yes, cut it 10%. I think that's enormously significant. Enormously significant. Murphy perhaps has more of a reputation as a more peace-oriented senator. Blumenthal, no. And yet he voted to cut the 10%. So those were terrific advances over what we had in the past. They lost. I mean, we lost. It didn't go through. But even getting that step was terrific. When the military budget itself came up, all of them voted to pass the military budget. None of them voted against it. There were, however, 14 members of the Senate who voted against the military budget, none of them from Connecticut. And there were also in the House, there were, I'm not sure I have it here. Okay, so there were 43 representatives in the House who voted against the final military budget, none of them from Connecticut. So what we have an uphill battle, but I think that the question you raised is answered, that we made some progress this year.
Yeah.
And this referendum is to encourage even more progress. We have to really move this issue, because our cities are starving. We can't run our cities the way they're being starved. It's not just not possible.
Henry, I want to, believe it or not, we're running short on time. This half hour flies by, and it's doing it again. So I want to get to one question, which I think requires some serious analysis, and that's the question. You know, you mentioned that the Connecticut has a pretty bad history in terms of taking a stand, with the exception of Johanna Hayes and our senators, on this particular 10% budget cut. But when it comes to approving the military budget or talking about the issue of how to slice some of that, take a bigger slice out of that military budget and deal directly with the human needs that are happening at the state and city level in Connecticut. You know, there is a vested interest here, as you pointed out, jobs, right? Military jobs. There's all kinds of military producers in this state, which account for, I'm not sure the number of jobs, perhaps you know it. But the question that I wanted to raise is the question of conversion from military production to peacetime production. And this is something that has been on the table literally for decades. And I'll just mention this, one of the people that's responsible for bringing it up way, way back in the 70s was Professor Seymour Melman. And he said that for too long, the taxes of our citizens and revenues desperately needed by our cities and states have been drawn into Washington and wasted on senseless war and unnecessary military gadgets. So what are the prospects? I mean, I just heard that people can't buy washing machines and refrigerators right now because they're not being produced in large enough numbers. Could Pratt and Whitney and other military Raytheon and other companies be converted to produce peacetime products like that?
So the workers at Pratt and Whitney and Electric Boat and Sikorsky, they can produce anything. Their skills would allow them to produce anything. We talked to machinists. We talked to leaders of the machinist union, and they said anything out of metal or fiberglass, we can produce. We can make it. We have the skills. We have the machinery to do it. Anything you want. But the manufacturers, the corporations, they don't want to. They've got a wonderful deal with the Pentagon. No matter how much it costs to make one of these killer weapons, they get that plus a guaranteed profit. They don't have to compete. They basically have a monopoly on it. So it's a terrific deal for them. In the past, actually, over 30 years ago, they were offered General Dynamics, which owns Electric Boat, was offered $10 million to investigate, to do research on conversion. It tore the check up. Wasn't interested. Let me just finish it since we don't have much time.
Yeah, we have 2 minutes.
So let me just finish and say that the Peace Council has initiated a coalition across the country to create resolutions similar to the referendum that is on the ballot in New Haven, to create coalitions, local coalitions, grassroots organizations, social justice organizations, unions, peace people, and so forth, to hold public hearings, to allow people to speak about what they could do with the billions and billions of dollars that now go to killing, how we could heal our cities, how we could prevent the militarization of the police, which goes along with fighting wars abroad and selling weaponry. So the coalition is called Money for Human Needs, moneyforhumanneeds.org. And we urge people to look into that because cities across the country are starting to do this. People in cities across the country are building coalitions to follow up on this. Let's get the money that is now being used for killing and put it to the human needs of our cities, the desperate human needs of our cities and the people that live there.
Well, Henry Lowendorf, thank you so much. Let's just remind people about this referendum. You might want to restate the language briefly and then what the ballot looks like and where they'll see it on that ballot.
Sure. So the referendum in English is, shall Congress prepare for health and climate crises by transferring funds from military budgets to cities for human needs, jobs, and an environmentally sustainable economy? It's found on the right side of the budget. it's yes or no. We support it or we don't. And we're urging everyone in New Haven who votes to look for the referendum and to vote yes. We want the we want as big a vote as we can get, because we have to make it clear that our members of Congress have to listen to us.
Once again, thank you so much, Henry Lowendorf, chair of the Greater New Haven Peace Council, for talking to us about this important initiative today on Mic Check. We'll talk soon, Henry. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome, Richard. Thank you.
Goodbye. Mic Check is wrapping up now. The Ralph Nader Radio Hour is next. Stay tuned to WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM, and streaming online at WPKN.org. My name is Richard Hill. Thanks for listening.
It's the Ralph Nader Radio Hour.
Stand up, stand up. You've been sitting way too long.
Welcome to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. My name is Steve Scrovan, along with my co-host David Feldman. Hello, David.
Good morning.
And the man of the hour, Ralph Nader. Hello, Ralph.
Hello, everybody. Get ready for a good show.
That is absolutely correct. Ever since President Trump pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal in 2018, Iran and the United States continue to be stuck in a cycle of brinkmanship and violence. Our first guest, David Barsamian, is a journalist and lead author of Retargeting Iran, who is here to tell us more about America's turbulent history with that very important Middle Eastern country. His book is a facts-only objective account of where America has gone wrong